begin this evening. I think we'll bypass the study in Proverbs. I'm just sort of making that decision right now. And think together about two passages that relate to feet. Luke chapter 7 is one of those. And it's not unfamiliar. Beginning in verse 36, then one of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him. And he went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to eat. And behold, a woman in the city who was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of fragrant oil and stood at his feet behind him weeping. And she began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with the fragrant oil. Let me stop there just a moment and remind you of a couple things culturally that put this in a better perspective. The first of which is streets were not paved then. The roads were unpaved. There were lots of animals. Every now and then we're driving toward Hopkinsville or someplace and look to the side of the road and I see, yeah, the Amish have been there. And it's not because I see their tire tracks either. All right. And you multiply that by multitudes of donkeys and sheep and animals and dirty streets. And if it's rainy, some of you are scrunching your face and you know. And your feet are going through it. So when you come into the house, you wash your feet. Now, in most families, if they came in, family members would do that if they were of such an economic level that they were down low, that's all they could do. But if you could afford it, you had a servant do that for you. And preferably, you had someone who was not a part of the covenant community do it, because feet were the dirtiest part of your body that way. They're always in touch with what was unclean. Ceremonially unclean. And it was a basic courtesy that when you came in off the street, when you were coming in, you washed your feet. For very practical reasons, you washed your feet. And you had someone do that. In this case, as the story unfolds, we'll see that that was not done for Jesus when he came to this Pharisee's home. Probably it was not just an oversight. I don't know what was going on in Simon the Pharisee's mind, but he didn't do it. But in God's providence, he had this woman come in who simply was described as a sinner. Within the Jewish community, they didn't talk about the specifics about why a woman would be a sinner. You didn't have to. You gave that designation and you knew. So you didn't get into all the sort of details. She comes in, and in this community, she's recognized. They knew who she was. And she's standing at Jesus' feet as she's reclined at the table, and she starts to weep. Over his feet that haven't been washed yet. And with her tears, she begins to wash his feet and anoint his feet. And feet that are yet unwashed, she kisses. So you have that picture in mind. Verse 39, now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he spoke to himself. This is just in his heart. This is one of those Genesis 18, where the Lord comes where to Abraham and Sarah's in the tent and she's listening, and in her heart, she laughs when he says, Sarah's going to have a baby in 9 months. And the Lord said, how come Sarah laughed? She said, I didn't laugh. Oh, yes, you did. Who heard what Simon was saying in his heart? The same God who heard Sarah laugh in her heart and say what she said. He said to himself, this man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who is touching him, for she's a sinner. And Jesus answered and said to him, Simon, I have something to say to you. So he said, Teacher, say it. There was a certain creditor who had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. And when they had nothing with which to repay, he freely forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him more? Simon answered and said, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. And Jesus said to him, You have rightly judged. Then he turned to the woman and said to Simon, Do you see this woman? I entered your house, and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. You know, I didn't point this out, ladies, as we said it. Some of us don't have much hair left, but even if we did, taking your hair to wipe such dirty feet. But she has done this. You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in. Verse 46, you did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Then he said to her, your sins are forgiven. Those who sat at the table with him began to say to themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. I've said this before to you, but it's worth saying again and for us to keep in mind that when Jesus made this final statement that in verse 47, her sins which are many are forgiven, for she loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. The first glance at that would tell us, well, if I haven't been out there and doing a lot of the really big sins, you know, the really bad things, then I must not be able to love God very much. You know, it's only those who have really experienced it all, who've done it all, like these two thieves robbing and dealing drugs. Now, they can really love God, but if I haven't done that, I can't know. That's not it at all. What Jesus is getting at is this woman recognized her sin. And it's as you and I come to grips with the seriousness of sin as a whole, but then in our personal application, understand my sin and how grievous and serious my sin is to a holy God, that we begin to enter into an appreciation of what forgiveness really is, and then loving him for who he is. So, a question to ask ourselves as we stop at this first stopping place this evening, this first passage that deals with feet, is how much do I love him? Do I really appreciate the sinfulness of my sin personally? Yeah, the custom for reclining at tables wasn't just that it would recline. If you had a table in the center, let's say it was a circle, but whatever shape it was, you would recline, sort of a cushion, I assume cushions, couch like, that would lean up toward the table. So your feet are back behind you. Yes, so that's where she is. So when you think of the Lord's Supper that way, they're reclining that way then also, apparently. We're not going to read this passage. In fact, I'm going to read the comments of a fellow named John Bloom on John chapter 13. If you care to go over there, you might do so and be reminded of the other situation that involves feet. This is Jesus washing the disciples' feet. So we're coming to the Lord's table this evening, and it's appropriate that we reflect a little bit on that event that preceded the Lord's table that evening. And Bloom has a wonderful way of thinking through these passages. So I'm just going to read this to you. It's one, in fact, at our Wednesday evening Bible study a few months ago, I shared with our folk there. So if you were there and heard it then, you'll hear it again this evening. But as I read it again to myself, it was another encouragement. So here's what he writes. Peter watched Jesus make his way toward him, washing the feet of other disciples. It had already been a confusing Passover. Jesus had been unusually burdened all day. The atmosphere during the meal was charged with ominous anticipation. Peter had grown used to Jesus doing and saying unpredictable things, but what Jesus was doing now was just plain wrong. He was the last person in the room who should be washing feet. All of Peter's life, he had been taught that feet were dishonorable members of the body. They were usually dirty, frequently smelly, and among the most likely members to come in contact with the things the law declared unclean. Outside of immediate family, feet were washed by slaves and servants, ideally non-Jews, so as not to subject any of the covenant people to such humiliation. And one never insulted an honored person by pointing one's feet at them. That was a little cultural clip I didn't realize. You didn't use your feet to point things. That was an offense. But here is the Messiah, the most honored Jew to ever walk the earth, stripped like a common slave, with a towel around his waist, willingly handling the unclean feet of his disciples. This was backwards. If anything, Peter should be down there washing Jesus' feet. When Jesus got to Peter, he smiled at him and reached for his feet. But Peter pulled them back. "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus loved Peter. The rock never did anything right or wrong without jumping in with, or in this case, without withholding both feet. He knew what Peter was thinking. So he replied, "What I'm doing you do not understand now, but afterwards you will understand." By the way, that was the title of this little note. What I'm doing, you don't understand now, but afterwards you will understand. Unwilling to subject Jesus to such dishonor, Peter said, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus' countenance became dead serious. "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." The shock of this statement stunned Peter for a second. He was trying to preserve his master's honor, but Jesus was essentially telling him, "Unless you let me bear your dishonor, your uncleanness, you can't be my disciple." Well, he didn't understand what this all meant, but Peter would leave no doubt about his trust in and love for Jesus. So he said, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Joy radiated from Jesus' eyes and smile. And as he washed Peter's feet, he said, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean." Then he paused for a moment and looked into Peter's eyes. This beloved man was unknowingly about to face the most difficult, grievous, and glorious 3 days of his life. He would benefit from this reassurance. Jesus said, "And you are clean." Then his eyes dropped back to Peter's feet, and he resumed washing and said, "But not every one of you." Bloom drew two lessons There are many, I'm sure, from John 13, but he drew these two lessons. Listen to them. First, much of the Christian life is spent trusting Jesus now and understanding him later. Isn't that true? Jesus typically does not feel it necessary to explain on the front end why he's doing something the way he's doing it. And like Peter, when it looks wrong to us, we're tempted to object to the Lord's will. God understands and is patient with our confusion and even our deep wrestling or grief, but he wants us to trust him and not grumble. God's ways are not our ways. That's what Isaiah said, wasn't it? His purposes for bringing or not bringing certain things to pass often extend far beyond us, maybe even generations beyond us. So during those times, we need to remember Jesus' words to Peter, "What I'm doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." That was the first lesson. The second is this: what Jesus is bringing about in the sometimes confusing, sometimes very painful work he's doing in our lives is sanctification. He's washing our feet. He not only bathes us, completely removing the guilt of our sin in his cleansing work on the cross, but in love he keeps forgiving us. That's 1 John 1:9, isn't it? And he keeps disciplining us so that we will share his holiness. We were reading that in Hebrews chapter 12 at the end of the service this morning, weren't we? That's his purpose and what he's doing in our lives. Our understanding his purposes in a particular providence, this particular incident that's going on in my life right now, understanding that tends to be not as important to God as our trust in his character. So together, let's continue to trust in the Lord, as Solomon said in Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not on our own understanding. Because one day we will understand, and we will with great joy proclaim, as the psalmist did in Psalm 145, "The Lord is righteous in all his ways and kind in all his works." Amen. I thought those would be some good thoughts for us as we go to the Lord's table tonight. I hope they will be for you. Let's bow our hearts and heads and just in quiet for a few moments confess any unconfessed sin to the Lord. Ask him to cleanse us for this time of taking his elements.